tired of trying to measure up. Chapter 7. I feel as though it's never enough. George dragged himself into my office and slumped down in a chair. He was silent for quite some time. With a downcast look, he finally said, "I didn't want to come today. I just want to give up." Don't you get tired of me?" "What's going on, George?" I asked. "I was doing so well again, like last September," came the reply. "But this week I got back into behaviors I thought I'd left behind for good. I feel so ashamed. I wish I knew what was going on." I knew what was going on. George was on the low end of a cycle I've come to recognize in most of my counseling clients, the give up, try hard cycle. I had seen George on this downstroke before. Just 7 weeks earlier, he had been overcome with shame and despair. Then came victory and vindication. Through sheer white-knuckle willpower, George had managed to grind out 6 weeks of abstinence from some very unhealthy sexual behaviors that had preoccupied his life for years. That sent his self-esteem skyrocketing. George was convinced he was on top of his problem forever. The week before this particular session, however, he had run out of self-effort fuel and crashed once more. Now, weary and ashamed, he wanted to give up. Introducing the cast. In theater, irony is characters working towards one goal but obtaining the opposite result. To grasp the irony in the life drama of shame of a shame-based person, it's necessary to meet the cast that plays in the inner drama of each one who suffers from the effects of shame. You'll understand the irony a little later. Giving up. There are 5 integral characters who provide the energy for both the give-up side and the try-hard side of the cycle. First is the outside source, delivering shame messages about the person. Second are the messages that shame. The third character in the cycle is the mind of the person, who looks at himself as defective and shamed. Fourth is the person's resulting behavior. And finally, there are the cheerleaders, that is, other people involved in the person's life who shout messages to him from the sidelines. Let's define these more specifically one by one as we see how the cycle works. The outside source. Some people have come from parent-child relationships that are overtly shaming. By that I mean there was name-calling, comparing, put-downs, favoritism, perfectionism, sideways communication, shaming rules, and rejection. One 30-year-old client, whom I'll call Dale, told me about growing up in a relationship with a stepfather and stepbrother. Very often, the two of them would do things together and not include Dale. With great difficulty, he told me how it was when they did include him. The three of them would be watching television, for instance, and Dale's stepfather would ask his own son if he wanted something to drink. Or he'd leave the room and return with popcorn for just the two of them. Rejection had left a shame wound in this man. "What's wrong with me?" Dale asked me through tears. Others have come from family systems that were upside down, where the children were expected to meet the needs of the parents. Many more have been shamed by an abusive spouse or abusive children. Still others bear the shame of living with someone who is addicted to drugs, alcohol, sex, work, or religion. Many have received messages that shame them from sources outside of their family. Being mugged, beaten, or raped is extremely shaming. Nearly 60% of all rapes are committed by someone the victim knows, yet only 8% are reported. How can this be? I suggest that the reason these attacks are not reported is shame. And in a society that idolizes a macho image for men, it's particularly shaming to be a male victim. Simply making a mistake or being corrected in public can cause feelings of shame. Being passed over for a promotion or raise sends indicting messages to people, as does getting fired, being laid off, or having extreme periods of extended periods of unemployment. Children are shamed when they are teased by their peers for getting F's and even A's, or for looking, talking, walking, or dressing a certain way. For many people, attending church is an extremely shaming experience. Performance-based religion shames people for struggling, asking, doubting, feeling, or resting, and for not complying, reading, giving, attending, or doing. For some, the experience of church, or the thought of God, has such bitter, shaming connotations that they avoid them altogether. The messages that shame. Perhaps this is the easiest part of the cycle to understand. As a result of relationships and experiences with our outside sources, we receive most of our information about who we are as people. When the messages are wounding, we tend to read them like this. Something's wrong with me. I'm a bad person. I can't do anything right. I'm defective, inadequate, selfish, incompetent, worthless, crazy, stupid, in the way. I'm an embarrassment, a mistake, a pest. The mind. The next character to come on stage is your mind. Belief. The mind begins with the belief system, or what I earlier referred to as the shame grid. This means that you have a belief system or mindset that perpetuates shame. If you are of this mindset, you will recognize the elements that contribute to the enslaving cycle. First, you accept the outside source as a reliable, legitimate place to find out about yourself. In other words, in order for me to have the power to shame you, you have to believe that I have the power to determine something about your value as a person. Second, you accept that what I'm saying about you through words, actions, or our relationship is actually the truth. Third, you come to the conclusion that someone who is as bad as you deserves to feel bad and deserves to be punished. This means that you become the judge and jury and find yourself condemned in the courtroom of your mind. After years of practice, this pattern has become natural for you. You never question its validity. You accept the message as true. This leads you to a crossroads, to a point where your will is involved. You must now make some choices about what to do next. Decision. You now choose. Either you give up or you try harder. If you conclude that your poor performance has failed, the situation is hopeless, and you are a shameful, defective individual, you will give up. You choose to act in a way that fits best with your assessment of yourself, so you embark on the giving up part of the cycle. The behavior. When you act in a way that's consistent with your shame, the cycle is complete. You may, and here's the irony, do exactly the thing you hate doing. This fulfills the outside source's assessment of you, and it was fulfilled because you accepted and acted upon the assessment. The worst of it is that the cycle isn't complete yet. It starts over. You'll tend to stay in relationships that enable you to feel as bad as you need to feel. Or you might even perpetuate the bad feelings yourself. The messages of shame are so deeply ingrained into your identity that you become the perpetrator. For instance, Monica had a problem with overeating. When she ate too much, and even when she ate normally, she felt guilty. She also felt like a weak, bad person. She would shame herself by calling herself derogatory names. She'd say, "I should feel bad for being such a weak person and such a pig." Then she would overeat again. Without knowing it, she was simply doing the behavior that allowed her to feel as shamed as she should feel for being so bad. The cheerleaders. While this part of the cycle is happening, people in your life observe your behavior and shame you for it. What's wrong with you? How can you act that way? You should be ashamed. Don't you care what people think of you? Frankly, I'm disappointed in you. I thought you would have known better than that. The cheerleaders compare you to others, quote Bible verses at you, or find a variety of ways to hide or excuse you when someone is looking. They are represented by the figures in the diagram on the previous page. The arrows are their additional shaming messages. Some practical examples. Let me further illustrate how the cycle works for someone caught in the trap of shame. By describing the cycle, I don't mean to imply that a person actually thinks these thoughts consciously. Some people may, most, however, experience this as an automatic process. Outside source. A husband batters his wife. Shaming message. The abuse and blaming says to the victim, "You are so defective, I can do this to you. Your needs, feelings, and personal boundaries don't matter." Belief. I am a defective, bad person. Someone as bad as me deserves to be hurt. I am not loved, accepted, or capable. Nothing I do is good enough. Decision. What's the use? I don't deserve a healthy relationship anyway. If I leave, I might end up in a worse situation. I give up. Behavior. The victimized wife stays in a relationship and continues to be abused. Outside source. The battering continues. Shaming message. The abuse and blaming by the perpetrator plus the victim's own behavior, giving in to and accepting the abuse, says to the victim, "It's your fault. What's wrong with you? If you were a sane person, you would leave." Belief. I'm a bad person who deserves what I get. No one else would want a relationship with someone like me. Decision. I deserve to get hurt. This serves me right. I'm lucky even to have a relationship. Behavior. The victim stays in the relationship and continues to be abused. Chemical use, overeating, undereating, self-abuse, abuse of others, and even suicide may occur at this point as a means of self-punishment for the victim. You may know someone who has gone from one abusive relationship to another. In frustration, you might say, "Why do you keep doing that?" And with equal frustration, they'll probably answer, "I don't know." I'm convinced that this cycle explains the behavior. As you can see from the complete cycle illustration, the cycle also escalates. When this person acts out his shame and anger in an abusive way towards himself or his children, his own behavior has begun to generate a message that shames. He behaves in a way that he said he never would. It goes against his values. The outside perpetrator can move away or even die, and the victim will continue to receive shaming messages. His own thoughts and behavior will produce these. Trying hard. Trying harder is not the way to break the cycle I've just described. Shame is a master of disguise. What convinced me of this is something I have noticed in counseling. I have seen corporate executives whose marriages are in as much trouble as those of alcoholics. They just look better. I have seen pastors who are as shallow and callous as bartenders. They just look better. I have seen submissive wives who are just as tired and disillusioned as prostitutes. They just look better. How can this be? Because positive self-effort fails as an adequate source of inner peace and value, in the same way that negative self-effort fails as an escape from shame. In order to understand the try-hard side of the cycle, let's take a look at our cast of characters again. The descriptions of the first two cast members, the outside source and the message, are the same as before, but when the mind or shame grid comes into play, the descriptions appear to be different. Let's check the differences and see how they work. The mind. This is on the trying hard side of the cycle. Belief. Here is the point at which you appear to respond differently to the shaming message. You seem to reject the message. At first, you react against the validity of the outside source, rejecting it as a legitimate source of messages about you. Second, you react against the against what the outside source says about you. No longer the prosecutor, you become the defense attorney, determined to prove your innocence. Again, there only appears to be a difference. The fact that you have reacted so strongly to the shaming messages by rejecting them and defending yourself against them really means that the shame has reached you. Your shame grid has allowed the shame in, and it is wreaking its havoc. Your response may be different, but the wound is there. Decision. Now, of course, you must make a choice about what to do next. You can give up or try harder. At this point, there is a genuine departure from the cycle as we've understood it so far. You're really tired of feeling bad, so you come to a different conclusion. You decide that your performance can prove that you are better. The situation is hopeful, and you are going to establish once and for all that you are a capable, powerful person. You decide to try harder. The behavior. Once you act in a way that's positive and powerful, the try-hard side of the cycle has begun. There are many reasons why you might decide to try harder. Perhaps you're tired of the consequences that result from the give-up side of the cycle. You might have a positive turn of events that fills you with hope. You might begin a relationship with a person or a group of people who pep-talk you into believing that you really are capable. You may have just attended this year's version of the Try Hard Conference. You might know someone who has struggled with problems similar to yours and has overcome them. Or maybe you're rested up from having given up for so long. So your behavior now swings to the opposite of what you did before. If you used to overeat, you undereat. If you used to neglect your Bible reading, you're sure to read it daily and even get up half an hour earlier than usual to do it. If you struggle with pornography, you painstakingly avoid the internet and certain movies. If you have a problem with chemical use, you grit your teeth and abstain. Messages that affirm. The positive behavior promises a cure to the shame. You are great. See how capable you are. You are loved and accepted now. Now the cycle should be complete, but it isn't. It simply starts over as these affirming messages deflect off the shame grid. Finally, of course, the cheerleaders are there to put in their 2 cents on your life. The final cycle results. See the diagram on page 99. The irony. Here's where we can see the irony of trying to perform your way out of shame. Even when affirmations and support come through your shame grid, your mind rejects the praise. You simply don't believe the messages. What comes through is, it's not true. I'm still not good enough. I could do better. Besides, if people knew what I'm really like, they wouldn't be giving me all these strokes. Or you push away the validation because humility earned a lot of points in the past. Or you were taught that the way to get God to love you was to hate yourself enough. Do you see that in the depths of your soul, your belief, your self-appraisal, has not changed? Now comes the time to evaluate and decide. Has the effort worked? Do you know you're a valuable, acceptable person? Is everyone pleased? Have you lived up to the standard? Have you proven your family wrong yet? No? Better try harder, says the inner taskmaster. So you return to more positive behavior, and the cycle continues. You've returned to the try-hard side of the cycle. But let's say that instead of being only the second time, it's the 10th time. The inner voice is demanding answers. Hasn't this worked yet? Can you finally say you're valuable? Can you finally say you're an acceptable person? Isn't everyone satisfied yet? Haven't you lived up to the standard yet? Haven't you proven to your family that you can make it yet? Hasn't God seen enough? You are tired, disillusioned, ashamed. You've run out of self-effort fuel, so you decide to give up. Then it's back to the give up side of the cycle. Three tiring scenarios. I want to put the scenarios described in this chapter into everyday context by describing three types of people that result from buying into the lie that self-effort is the way to healthy self-esteem. The three scenarios are the underachiever, the overachiever, and the roller coaster. The underachiever. This person spends most or all of his life on the give-up side of the cycle. He is tired, burned out, disillusioned, depressed, addicted. His addictions look bad and he knows it. He disappears or wishes he could. These folks are perpetual underachievers. People around them feel frustrated by the huge disparity between their capabilities and their performance. They either pep-talk them concerning their value or shame them for not performing. But they simply can't perform their way out of the cycle. No one can have a close relationship with them. They push people away physically and emotionally and push God away spiritually. It's because they're doing too poorly right now. They are the ones in families, churches, and societies that people take care of for a while until they're given up on because of their lack of response. For all the performance-based people around them, they are simply bad for public relations. Once in a while, they find themselves in an environment that shames them for being so defective. Then they swing over to the try-hard side, but it doesn't last for long. They are simply out of gas to start with. They merely survive. The overachiever. These people never get tired, or at least never let anyone know they are. They live their whole lives on the try-hard side of the cycle. They are the go-getters, the shakers, the movers, the ones who make things happen. They are energetic, enthusiastic, and charismatic. They think that workaholism is better than alcoholism. They think that under-eating is the solution to overeating. Their addictions look good. They perpetually overachieve. People around overachievers feel frustrated because they can't keep up with them. Those who care about them try to get them to rest, but to no avail. Rest is a waste of time. No one can get close to them. They're not in one place long enough. They put people off physically and emotionally, and they put God off spiritually, because they're too busy doing important things right now. They're the ones in families, churches, and societies that take care of others, for a while at least, until someone doesn't notice or they don't get the results they want. Once in a while, they simply run out of gas and swing over to the give-up side. You've seen it happen, the successful business person who sells everything, gives it all away, and disappears. Or the acclaimed psychologist who helps hundreds of people for 30 years and then hangs himself. Or that respected clergyman who has preached holy living in the 2 decades since becoming your pastor and then splits for the coast one day with the church secretary. When they get caught, they repent and promise it will never happen again and return to the try-hard side. The roller coaster. The third type of person is the one whose lifestyle vacillates from one side of the cycle to the other like a roller coaster. Obviously, this is no way to live either. It's a tiring, frustrating, and shaming life characterized by extremes. Love, then hate. Hopefulness, then despair. Signals that say come close, then stay away. You're just never sure what's next. This person knows a lot about everything and not much about anything. When they're on the verge of failure, they try harder. When they're on the verge of success, they give up. They seldom follow through with things about which they give their word. But they come through when nothing is expected or even wanted. People are afraid to get close to them because they can't be trusted. You never know with whom you are dealing at any given time. The successes and failures of the roller coaster are mostly determined by their level of self-effort fuel at any given moment. When the energy level is high, they try hard, look good, and do it all. When they run out of energy, they give up and lapse into a state of disillusionment. Once they are rested up, they attend another seminar, read another book, or see another therapist, or buy another set of tapes, and they're on their way again. Needless to say, there is no victory or progress in the give-up, try-hard cycle. The person found on the give-up side is a living testimony of the power of shame. The person found on the try-hard side is a living testimony to self-righteousness. And the last person, one who flips from one side to the other, is a living testimony to the tiredness that comes from having no God one minute and yourself as God the next. Thank God, I mean literally, that our Lord has a way to set us free. For those who have been badgered by false gods, who have caused them to labor under a gospel of shame, it's time for the good news. I want to introduce you, maybe for the first time, to the one true God and his message of grace, which will set you free from the wearying, give up, try hard cycle.